right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, and I am your host. We get to talk about things that are happening in tech. We leave this program wide open for you, so if you want to call or text all program long, I'll try to answer your questions or at least give you at least a little bit of direction, 330-729-9977, or you can text at 333-1570. I'm so glad to be doing a computer show. We haven't done one in a while. I've been just going all gangbuster for the business side, so we given any additional real estate, we took that up and talked some business stuff. But now we get to do a computer. Now, for those of you who have never joined us, let me give you the premise here. So we I started a computer company way back, okay, early 2000s. And I went after first. I didn't try to be typical. I thought, okay, what is the demographic that absolutely needs me the most? And what I found is you had sort of the older demographic that needed me the most. They were reluctant to jump in. They swore it off. They'd rather do paper. It was a little intimidating to get pissed at it. They'd throw it around. And I said, these people need me, right? And so I was nice and patient, and I drank less coffee then, so I was slower speaking. And we really hit it off. I was a big talk radio junkie. And so I loved my political hosts. I grew up listening to Dan Ryan and Ron Verb and all of those guys. And so one day I heard Dan Rivers out at the Eastwood Mall suffering through some dial-up internet connection, and went out there and rescued him, set up some kind of mock internet setup. And from that point, we decided to just start doing small segments because his the people who listened to his program were in the same age group that I wanted to hit and go after. And so we opened up phone calls and let people in his audience ask questions. And they started asking things like, how do I do this? And why does this happen? And we did this little help segment, and it kind of grew into its own program because there was such a demand. My industry was really bad about keeping the technology over the heads of everyone who was playing. And it was new enough that there were a bunch of people who were like, okay, if you're going to try to make this into a riddle, I'm not playing, right? Show me how to use this practically, and I'm on board. But if you give me a reason not to be here, I'm going to go over there and start using paper again and screw you. And that was the overall theme that my industry was stupid like that. And especially, in the 90s, there was a computer in the early 2000s as well. There was a computer shop on every corner because, listen, you got to you don't need any kind of licensing, right? You don't need any kind of permitting. If you halfway know what you're doing, you can set up an office shop and repair people's computers. And the standards are only sort of like a hypothetical. And over time they came out with Microsoft standards, and they had A+ certifications and hardware certifications and networking certifications. But general public, if I can show up and you fix my computer, then you're in business, kind of a thing. And so my industry got beat up pretty good on having a lot of people who, I'm not going to say fleeced anybody, because it's a pursuit. It's a really difficult pursuit to do troubleshooting, especially when it comes with an older group of people. It was not an easy task. But anyway, I created a company, a complete company out of it. And there were some stuff that I kind of felt bad that it was small enough that I didn't want to bill somebody for it or have somebody pay me an hourly rate to solve it. So this show became that, where this is my outlet. If you had a problem that maybe wasn't big enough to call, a computer company out to solve it, and you wanted to know about it, we use this real estate to teach and to have an outlet for those requests to come on the show. And it helped everybody. Everybody who's been listening to the show forever learned so much about how this stuff works. And we talk about things that are, happening on the edge of innovations, what's coming next. I give you some primers about, what's coming up in the technology cycles, what you should do. And we're all over the place. It's we can talk about science and technology and physics and anything that comes to mind. But anyway, that's the premise of the show. And sometimes we'll go super easy for our novices. Sometimes we'll be a little bit more advanced for people who are a little bit more seasoned. So not every show is going to be completely near wheelhouse, but no matter what, I can guarantee you'll learn something from it. So that's a couple minutes of telling you why We do what we do. And I've always loved doing it. I mean, if anything, you know, my wife and I talk about this program regularly as something that, man, I was so blessed into it. I can't believe I was able to, I was given, you know, the sort of like the opportunity to fill this role. And I just love the fact that you guys have all trusted me over these years to bring this information to you. And I really appreciate your loyalty, because any time that I've ever done something, you've always been there. You've always, you know, come through for me every time I've asked. And I really do appreciate you, the listener, for supporting us in our many, many, many endeavors over the years. I really appreciate you. Anyway, so a little bit of some of the Friday meeting type, you know, stuff that we talk about. If you've had a computer since, you know, Windows 3.1 and Windows 95 and Windows 98 and Windows ME and Windows XP and all the way up to modern, you really know that Windows has gotten a little bit more robust, right? And I know not all of you are happy with how things have come together, but as far as, and I have this debate, there's always one or two of you that will disagree with when I say this, and that's cool, you're allowed. But I like where things are going. I like that you don't have to spend so much money cleaning up infections and adware. I like it that it's naturally more you know, impervious to infections and scamming and hacking and whatever. I like the fact that there's some self-healing that's going on. And yes, that's coming from a person who makes money when your stuff breaks, that it's not breaking as often. You got to understand, our bench used to see 90% infections that came through. And that was for years, like 5-6 years. Things that came through our bench were computers that got infected. There was a time when I couldn't walk up to a computer and it not have some level of infection, even if it was just some malware or some adware that popped things up. Everything was infected. So we spent so much time and resources in putting security packages and software and all of this stuff. All of you in this industry are totally like conditioned that one of your most valuable tools is your antivirus. Like, you wouldn't operate without an antivirus. And I'm looking around now and I'm looking at like 4 or 5 of the computers that I use. And I'll tell you that there's nothing special about the security packages that I run anymore. Windows for my using is good enough. And I haven't been, you know, infected. I haven't been tricked into any kind of attachment openings. It's been a couple years here, and I think that Windows has gotten pretty good. So on our Friday meetings, we talk about, like, in the next year, in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years, will you even have a computer on your desk? Will you even ever need it to be repaired? Will you do everything just from your phone or your tablet? And a lot of these things, you know, I predicted them 10 years ago, and it's sort of happening just as we suggested, or I'm not going to say hoped. It's just that we predicted that they would. I do feel that, you know, eventually you and your computer, you know, your computer exposure will be cloud-based, and you're seeing that already. Like, where do you put your stuff and how does it accumulate? You got warring titles and warring companies that are really trying to get your business, whether it be an Apple environment or a Google environment or a Microsoft environment. They're all playing around with how to move your stuff. I mean, if you took a Microsoft product right now and you had Windows 10 and you logged it into your Microsoft account and you gave it the ability to store your files, and you gave it the ability to move your desktop and your documents wherever you go, and you set up another computer and you logged in with that same one, you would see that your desktop synchronizes and your documents synchronize and your OneDrive synchronizes. All of this stuff follows you no matter where you go. Well, this is pretty brilliant. At a certain point, if most of your stuff is just in the cloud, there'll be a point that your stuff really doesn't even need to synchronize. You don't need to have your stuff copy to all of your places. We're back to being a dumb terminal. You walk up to a dumb terminal and you just see a representation of your stuff. You never actually have your stuff. Your stuff stays somewhere nice and secure and locked down for you, and it just follows you around no matter what you log into. Now, you might be seeing your Word document, but you might not actually ever have your Word document sitting in front of you. You might have ways, conduits to move your stuff around and put it on a flash drive and send it to people and open it up. But it won't be in the same way that you have it right now. It's going to get better, right? And I feel like you don't have so much redundancy. Do you know about how much CPU power is? They sell these millions and millions and millions of processors, right? And everybody has this gargantuan processor, which they utilize like 1% all the time. So, but if you consolidated that and made the CPU, you know, power not be in your computer, you only have enough CPU power, not to process things, right? But to, you need visual stuff. You need to look at what's happening. The processing power is happening on somebody else's computer that knows what they're doing, the engineer property. Then you can cut what your capacities are, and you can cut where your processing power is, because it's all being done out there in the cloud in the collective. And then you just have to worry about getting something that shows you your stuff. And so it's a viewer more than it is a powerhouse. Now, then it's not always going to be the case. I mean, I have computers that do video renderings, right? Never going to be able to really, well, I take that back. I can't even say that. You will be able to do that in the cloud. In fact, I've seen a couple of programs that have the ability to work most of your stuff even more quickly than on your local computer having renderings. When I say renderings, here's what happens. Like when we used to do, we would do 30-second video commercials, right? We'd open Adobe Premiere, and then we'd take all this video footage. We use Premiere to populate a timeline. And then after we got all of our cut segments and our audio and our still frame, all this stuff in a timeline, in a project timeline, now it's time to save it so that it's one file. So when it renders, it basically cuts through all of the video and assembles it into one flowing piece of media, right? That's what it renders, like creating a final product from project data and from individual pieces of media. Well, for a 30-second commercial, it used to be that would be like a whole 6 or 8 hour deal. You hit save or you hit render and it drills through all of your footage, but it takes a long time to happen. By today's standard, I can do 30-second worth of video in like, you know, a couple minutes. So, man, we've just come so far with everyone. But that, just to give you an idea where we are going to be, I truly think that most of our stuff is going to be done with our phone. It's going to be sort of like the portal to which we get to all of our stuff. And everything else can just be dumb terminals. Your TV can be dumb. Your computer can be dumb. Your tablet can be dumb. You got this thing and you carry it everywhere you go. And it's pretty, you know, it's your phone. It knows who you are. It does biometrics. We got facial recognition. It's only usable to you. If something falls into somebody else's hands, they can't use it. It gets bricked, or at least it's locked down and nobody can do anything with it. I think that's pretty good up to this point as being the candidate where that is your key to your digital life is your phone. I was reading an article this morning about there are still a bunch of people who have not dabbled into two-factor authentication. And I want to encourage you to do this. It will make your digital life so much better. Every day I'm reading about friends of mine on Facebook who somebody hacks or hijacks their accounts on social media. Now, I want to tell you, this is sort of what it means. So I have two-factor authentication. It's enabled on Facebook. So you go into the security settings, you enable Facebook two-factor authentication, and here's what happens. You still have a sophisticated password with Facebook. You still have to log in using that sophisticated password, but you also have to have a second factor. Now, in my case, I use authenticator apps. So an authenticator app is, you ever go to have a bank where they give you one of those key fobs? And on that key fob, there's like a 6-digit number that changes like every minute or every 30 seconds. Well, that's it. So it sort of has a seed number that makes a predictable change over time. So a mathematical formula that makes your 6-digit number change, but it makes it predictably change. So when you have this fob on a timeline, it always knows what your number translated down to its original seed number will be. So you carry around this fob and you log in your bank account and it challenges you and says, enter your two-factor number. You look at your little keychain, you put the 6-digit number in, you hit submit, and it lets you in your account. So somebody hijacks your password, right? They could try to log in as you, but if they don't have your fob, they would have to have your password and your key fob in order to get in. Well, that's the two-factor deal. Most service providers, I don't care if it's your Gmail account or your eBay account or your PayPal account or your banking account or your Facebook account, all of them have security measures that will allow you to create a second factor. When we get back from this break, I'll kind of walk you through the authentication process. But if you want to pull out your phone and download the Google Authenticator, you'll see what I'm talking about in real time. I'll pop that open and kind of walk you through that. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I'm Joe Danier. We're just talking about two-factor authentication. I gave you the homework here to go out, pull out your cell phone, Android or Apple, go to the App Store and open up Google Authenticator. And you basically download this application, and it works almost like one of those old-style key fobs. It still generates a six-digit number. And so you initiate a site that it's going to be managing. Right now, I have 7 sites that Google Authenticator is managing the six-digit number on. So you just need one app. It's the easiest to do. And so basically what you do is you open your Facebook. You'll go into the security preferences. You'll go to two-factor authentication. Usually it will give you a QR code to snap. And that will take you and put it into your QR code reader that will connect the two, because you don't want to enter the code that does it. It's a long code. But anyway, hit zap the QR code, and now your phone is acting as a second key, so that if somebody somehow cracks into a database that you have a two-factor authentication set up on, they won't be able to get in unless they have both the phone and your password. Now, I will tell you, most of your passwords – most of them, because, you know, most of us use the same password on 150 different sites. So chances are that your username and password that you commonly use on every site has leaked into a database. It's on the dark web. They already have it, right? And so your username and password, where you can change it every once in a while, that's great and all. But, you know, I think that all of us, if it weren't for two-factor authentication, would be losing access to our stuff pretty regularly. So that's why I suggest you do that. You take especially the services that you use, Gmail and your bank accounts, your social media accounts, because identity theft, that's what they use. Those are the things that are most valuable. They can nab a profile on Facebook and purport to be you. They can scam a ton of people because they're going to say, "Hey guys, I'm stuck in Florida. I got a flat tire and I need $150 to get home. Could somebody lend me some?" And you're like, "Oh yeah, Bob. We know Bob, and sounds pretty logical. Let's give him $150." And it wasn't really Bob. It was someone who used Bob's bank account to steal $150 from a bunch of people. That's how it goes down. If they can get a usable account, which they do regularly, that's the kind of harm that they will attempt to do. So if you haven't done it yet, go mess around with two-factor authentication. Let me give you the only danger to two-factor authentication. Your phone and the two-factor, it applies to you as well. So if, let's just say you have the two-factor authentication code on your Facebook account and you lose your phone, or you have to get a new one and you can't take in consideration that one of your most valuable tools on that phone is your two-factor, guess what? You're locked out of your accounts as well. And while it's not impossible to overcome the two-factor, it takes a while. It's not immediate, and they make it difficult on purpose because they don't, you know, where it's not impervious, it's certainly a lot harder than just using the code. So here's what you're going to do. And take a second electronic device, a tablet, and you can get a super cheap tablet or phone, even an old phone. Doesn't even have to be a working phone. It just has to be a phone. And I want you to send your, get it on Wi-Fi, and I want you to send your Google Authenticator information to a second device. So the chances are, this is what you got to do. You got to keep that second device safe, because you don't want to really take it out of the house. You maybe put it on the dock and just leave it sit idle. And that way, if you ever did break or lose your phone, not all the two-factor authentication codes go along with it. You have a second device that has all of that stuff, just a little harder. I mean, it in effect, it makes it a little less secure, because now you got two devices that can open your stuff. So you got to protect that second one so that it stays charged enough that if you needed it, you could go get it, but not within easily grasp of someone who could grab your passwords and your two-factor authentication. So take that advice. And in fact, spend this weekend and just mess with it a little bit. I don't necessarily think there's a big risk in doing it wrong, because I don't think there is doing it wrong, but you'll kind of get used to, if you walk up to your computer every day and it challenges you and you have to do the two-factor, chances are most of the sites will allow you, once it knows that it's your device, it won't always ask you, because that's one of the one things. If it's going to challenge you every 2 seconds, you're going to stop using it because it's a pain in the butt whenever you have to log into something. But usually it only applies to if you walk up to a new device. So one thing, if you use your password and it doesn't recognize the device you're using, boom, it's definitely a two-factor challenge, and you'll be thankful. I mean, one time I was going out of town, and my phone went off that someone tried to log into my Facebook account, and I didn't even worry about it because I knew they couldn't get my two-factor authentication. So let them try. Anyway, 330-729-9977. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I'm Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer, and your host for this program where we get to talk about things that are happening in tech. You're invited along for the whole ride, 330-729-9977. You can text me at 333-1570. I know I talk really fast most of the time when I'm passionate about something, so you can tell me to slow down, but I'm not sure it will help the whole program along. Maybe for little instances, but not the whole program. 330-729-9977. Let's go to Mitch. Mitch, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hey, good afternoon. Listen, my question is about, I have run Firefox. I got version 87. I'm running a Windows 10 computer. And just lately, in the last few weeks, we noticed that when we're in the in Firefox, that the fonts are starting to pixelate. Sometimes they change color from black to pink, and then eventually they go back to normal. At first, I thought maybe my monitor was starting to go sour, but the more I look at it, it looks to me like there's something in the browser. A few years ago, I saw this trouble, I'm pretty sure, and I never documented it, and it finally, I must have fixed it, but that's what I'm calling about. Do you have any idea at all what could be causing that?
Yeah, sometimes the layout will get customed and damaged down to a certain point, and like the resolution will get changed and it'll get stretched. Sometimes you just have to blast the Firefox profile, let it be created anew, and then import your stuff back in there. That helps more often than anything else that I tried. Does the other browsers look okay? Like if you open Chrome, does it look all right?
No, I don't. I never did bring Chrome or the other browsers up. I will tell you this, but they had a feature in here that I never tried before. I did a complete refresh on this version 87, okay, which basically it took away everything and then brought it back up, and I had to go back in there and import my bookmarks again and get everything arranged, and that didn't seem to help. I've been out online trying to talk to some of the users out there because I find out a lot of people are pretty knowledgeable about this, and they'll go online and tell you what about the trouble and what they found to fix it. And they were talking about something called an accelerator, and it's... And like I said, I read it, but I'm not sure that I'm not knowledgeable enough to believe what they were saying. And my wife suggested you might have an answer right off the top of your head.
Yeah, and it might be something on the local, like, display settings, where instead of using, like, hardware acceleration, it's using some software acceleration. There's some performance settings in Firefox that allow you to change some of that. It's probably going to be too much for me to do on the air. Maybe what I'll do, I will direct you later on in the program after the next break. I'll just let you know where to go. Maybe I'll find some help articles. So just if you keep listening, I'll make sure that I tag the end of the show with stuff that you can go and look up.
Okay, sure. Cool. That sounds great.
All right. Thank you, Mitch. Appreciate it. And if you have any questions, 330-729-9977. And this is going to sort of apply to Chrome as well. Sometimes what will happen is that you have sort of like these warring display customizations where, your display on your main display might have a certain resolution, but you might have it zoomed in, or you might have some contrast settings that have been changed from the beginning. And so some of that stuff may in the future start conflicting with how things look. Even though your desktop looks really great and it's where you can see it, maybe the resolution doesn't work as great for the browser and it just looks either pixelated or blurry. And that's true if like you're way zoomed in or you're way zoomed out and stuff like that. So or if the resolution settings aren't preferred for your display. So the bunch of stuff I'll say as much as I can after the next break. I'll try to guide you towards setting your display properties in the browser. So we might help Mitch. If you, as a listener, know exactly what Mitch is talking about and can give some guidance, you can give me a call, 330-729-9977, or text me at 333-1570. I guess right now, two things happened over the last week with outages, and you'll see this every once in a while, and then you won't hear from it. Everything will be good for a couple months, but we had both Facebook go down last Tuesday, and it started like at 5 o'clock in the evening, and it got things back to normal in, you know, like maybe by 6:30. So it was only an hour. And then last night, Twitter got hammered pretty good, where they had an outage as well. And so what I started the program off with, you know, your stuff is going to live in the cloud, and then you have these networks that go and are out of commission for hours at a time. It's a scary proposition where at least if you know you have it on your local computer, you're not like, okay, I'm in a meeting and I'm going to pull up my thing and then, oh, offline, what do I do now? So it is a consideration where I think in the future there will be enough redundancy, shared spaces that you always have your stuff. But, you know, I was once, you know, going on, a flight and I wanted my stuff and I was like, wait, I got this Chromebook. I got to convert all of my stuff like to offline mode in order to use it. And that was kind of a little bit of an inconvenience because I'm used to wearing a laptop where most of my stuff is just sitting on the desktop. And if I don't have internet, I can still do stuff. But you get something that is internet-based and it adds a whole new level of complication. So 330-729-9977. Let's go to Elaine. Elaine, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hi, Joe. I hope you can. It really doesn't have anything to do with what you're talking about, though. I have a Dell computer, and this happens to me every once in a while. In the morning, I turn it on, and it's almost like somebody is on my computer. Like when I go to enter like a password or a program, it's just clicking away nonstop, super fast, and I'm unable to, you know, stop it or get in it, so I just shut down the computer. And when I restart it, I wait a little while. I restart it, it's fine. But I didn't know if that was somebody trying to hack in or what that was.
I mean, it's possible. If you've given remote access to somebody, it's possible for them to go in. It's more likely, though, that you might have some kind of device, like a USB device, a mouse, keyboard, that's just sort of stuck. And it's sending input to the computer that's being interpreted as a click or a movement or whatever. Is it random or does it look like it's doing stuff?
It's just random.
Okay. Yeah, it's more
it takes over. I cannot. And it's happened, like, it's been a couple months since it's happened, and it happened, you know, yesterday. And I thought, you know, maybe I would call you and see if, you know, it's something I should worry about or not.
When it does it the next time, unplug, if it's a USB mouse or keyboard, unplug the USB so that the device doesn't have the ability to send input. Or if it's a wireless, take the little receiver off the machine. And if it stops, that means whatever device you unplugged can't send those errant signals, and it'll stop moving around erratically.
So you think it's just the mouse?
It could be. If someone was hacking, it would be. You'd be more deliberate. You'd see files opening and stuff moving.
Yeah,
in. I don't think it would
what
be
I
randomized.
Thought. And like I said, but it's strange that it just happens early in the morning. It, like, once I'm got things open and I'm on it, that never seems to happen. So I just found that a little odd.
Yeah, and mice are real good for that too. If you take a laser or an optical mouse and set it down on a reflective surface or one that has some kind of pattern on it, sometimes that laser will bounce funky and it will actually send movement in data to the machine. So that's something to look at. If you put it maybe on a mat, a matte finish or on an actual mouse pad, that might take that away as well. But when you unplug the mouse, you'll see it'll stop so that you know that that's your offender.
Okay, next time it does that, then I'll give that a try.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Elaine. Appreciate you calling. All right, let's go next to Dan. Dan, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I always ask my listeners, are you on the speakerphone? I am. Does it sound okay?
You sound great.
Oh, okay, great. Well, I told you I'd call you back. We talked yesterday.
Yeah.
And got a new Asus computer. It's approximately 3 months old. And kind of went along with the setups that they had, and they had it in what they called the S mode. And I found it pretty frustrating, and I talked to you to kind of get the go-ahead whether to go out of it. And I can tell you that I successfully went out of it, and the computer is much more usable.
And the process, how was it? Was it cumbersome, or was it pretty easy to get in and out of it?
No, the only thing you're going to have to do, if you've set up your computer as an administrator, you're going to have to be able to use that administrator email, and then there is a PIN number for the computer to get into it. But once you tell them that that's what you want to do, you go out of it. Of course, you're out of it forever, but I think it was kind of a good idea for Microsoft to have this proprietary thing. I don't love Google, but I got to tell you what, without Google Chrome as your browser, it's really difficult to download a lot of programs that you typically want. And the other thing, too, is that if you use Microsoft and use that S mode, you end up a slave to the way they tell you to make shortcuts. Rather than going to more tools and create a tool, you're not allowed to do that in the Microsoft. But I can tell you that S mode, while it may have been well-intentioned, that's what it's called, right? S mode?
It is, yep.
Yeah. It really has, you know, I wanted to download one of the free word processors, and it wouldn't allow you to do that. They wanted to send you to the Microsoft Store and buy all their stuff.
It's crazy. So how's the hardware on that new Asus? You've been pretty loyal to the Asus brand over the last couple that you've purchased. How's this one in comparison?
Yeah, I mean, you know, probably if I had done it over, I would have got a little bigger keyboard. This is a small one. My wife is going to use it mostly. I'm used to the larger keyboard. But I got to tell you what, the processor is really fast, and I can vouch for what you said. The other Asus I have is really a workhorse, and you put a flash drive in that, I'm going to say 2.5 years ago, and it is night and day. It's almost like a brand new computer with that flash drive.
Absolutely. All right. Well,
an old Dell, which I had you put a flash drive in, and the processor on that's slow enough that it's not great, but it's good enough, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, enjoy that thing, and let me know if you need anything else.
Yeah, it was great. It was nice to you to hear. You were reminiscing about the time you came out to Eastwood.
Yeah.
And how you built your business, and well, I'll tell you what, just one more thing. I was at the Republican dinner last night, the Lincoln Day dinner. 500 people there, and they had a waiting list of about 80. So
wow.
It was what a night that was. But they had a great night. But I'll talk about that on Monday.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your weekend.
All right, Joe. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Take care. All right. Cool. Dan checking in with us here. Let's go next, 330-729-9977. Let's go to Jim. Jim, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hello, Joe.
Hi.
Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I'm having trouble loading a couple of programs onto my computers. Trying to load on Excel and an art program, CorelDRAW. Is there any way I can get these loaded onto my computer? They're new computers. One's a Dell, one's an HP, I believe. And they're Windows 10. Is there a way I can load these on without having to buy new programs or subscribe?
Okay, is it like an older version of the program trying to bring into a modern Windows 10 deal? Is that kind of the thing?
Yes.
All right. I have always put it in the sort of like the lap of the vendor. So if it's Corel that you're going after, I'll look at articles about bringing legacy software, and usually they'll sort of give you things to try, like you can emulate older versions of the operating system and install it as if it were, you know, like in Windows XP. Sometimes you can put it in those emulation modes and it'll be better. Sometimes you do the 32-bit versus the 64-bit, but I don't think anyone has worked exactly under one premises. So I usually go to the vendor and say, here's what I'm doing, and I get better guidance right from them than I would just generally. It's possible to do. I think that, you know, we've gotten some pretty ancient stuff. But the problem is that with Windows 10, they cut some of their legacy support. So if you go too old, there's just some stuff that the programs are dependent on that just don't exist anymore. So no matter what you try, they're never going to work. You want to make sure you discover that before you get too much effort into it.
Right. If I try to update the programs, trying to find something that maybe is just a few years old that I can load on there without having to subscribe, or, you know, if I had to purchase the CorelDRAW newer version for, you know, $300-$400, whatever, and then I can load it onto a couple of computers, I'd be okay with that. I don't want to have to subscribe to something that's going to cost me $300-$400 a year. Same with Excel. Anything I've found is I have to pay $10 a month, $120 a year. I don't really need anything like that. I don't need something that's going to update.
Yeah, and you know? they're preferring that you do the subscription model, but most of them will have an alternative that's a little harder to get to. Like, I know you can pick up the retail version of Office. They're making it a little bit more expensive to do it, and they're making it a little bit harder to get there, but you can still pick it up in some retail stores. So you might have to look for, you know, buying the disk. If they have a disk, then chances are that you can buy a license that's standalone rather than the cloud version.
Okay. Now, what stores would you recommend that I check on something like that with?
I would, you know, first go to one of the online retailers. Try like Newegg or maybe, you know, even Amazon, and see if you could just purchase the physical disk for a version. If it's a couple versions early, you might just have an individual that had stock of something before they went the subscription model and be able to, you know, to buy it. That's probably where I would start.
Okay, that's what I'll do. I just want something that I can load onto a couple of different computers. A lot of the subscriptions you purchase is for one computer only.
Yep.
And I don't want to go that route.
Right. Okay, Jim, thank you so much.
Check it out, Joe. Thank you.
All right, appreciate you being out there. And I do want to tell you, though, Dan mentioned that we were doing these flash drives or these solid-state drives in a lot of these computer upgrades. We have a ton of solid-state drives stocked up. It's like become our number one service that we do. So if you have a hard drive that has a physical platter drive, you can get that swapped out. Do a solid-state. I think the drive is less than $100. So the whole thing, maybe $250, $300 at most to get all of your stuff copied to a flash or a solid-state drive. And then it's like new again. So if you want to, you know, extend how long your computer lasted, is the number one way to add performance to a computer is switching over from those analog to digital. So we'll be right back. This is the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show, and there's a couple of things. I don't know if you're anything like me, but sometimes I give up on trying passwords. Like, I will go to some websites that maybe, you know, their websites are sophisticated to the point where my LastPass or my password saving thing doesn't work, and no matter what I try, I can never remember it. So I just kind of give in sometimes and just do a password reset, even without trying a single password. So I it feels like I've been beat up by passwording and all of that so much that I just don't have any confidence in my ability to remember passwords. Because number one, I use LastPass. So it's a password management software. And so if I can't fit it in there, I'm useless. I'm not going to write it down on sticky notes. I'm not going to put it somewhere so that I can go find it. It's just going to be I hope I know what email account it's registered to, because I'm going to reset that puppy and and make it something different. And the evolution of the passwords that I have to use, like for a while, I was letting LastPass or Chrome or whatever make up the password because I wasn't going to remember it anyway. So might as well have you manage it if we're gonna do that. But I usually am the one to give you sort of advisement of how you should manage passwords. But it's getting a little ridiculous, you know, even in my world with about, I'm going to say 5% of the websites out there. 95, I got my strategy works absolutely perfect. I don't know the password. I just let LastPass or my password management software handle it. But on those other five, I don't know. It's just daunting. And I just hit one of those on that last break. So I figured I would share out with you. But if you let me tell you the rest of the pitch before that break there. If you do have a solid state drive that you want to have done, Rich on Residential Services can absolutely swap some of those drives out for you. The phone number for the office, 330-259-7278. We can do in-store service, so you can drop your computer off. And coming soon, we are hiring a field support, so somebody that will come out into the field, visit you, do some services in-home, as well as pick up machines and ferry them back to the bench. I can't wait to have that option again. It was one of my favorite parts of it because a lot of you, you know, some of our services can be done without leaving. And if anything's going to happen to a machine, it's going to happen during transport. So I'd much rather one of us transport the machine than I picture like you bring in your computer and it's in the trunk and every corner that you make, it's slamming inside of your trunk. And I'm like holding my breath while that's happening. And I know sometimes it probably does. And we just get absolutely lucky that by the time you slap it on our desk, it isn't in pieces. But anyway, I'd much rather us come out to you. And if it's going to come back with us, that we can pack it in there so it doesn't move around in the back seat or in the trunk or whatever. So I'm very happy that we're going to be increasing that service again. And it's time. It's go time. We're going to get back to normal and we're going to get our services ramped back up. We're going to be ready for a full summer's worth of new product sales. We're going to add to what we inventory items wise, the services that we provide, the education that we put out there. The makerspace is going in next door, so we're going to have way more toys and tools to play with. This is going to be another exciting era for Youngstown Computer, Youngstown Makerspace, Youngstown Studio. So I hope everybody in this audience will make sure that you support us as we make announcements, fill up our classes. We're going to be running some Windows 10 classes. We're going to teach people how to do more hands-on type of stuff. So not only just using the computer, but then what the computer can make in that makerspace. This weekend, I burned a bunch of stuff with a laser engraver. We're messing around with some wood. If you follow me on Facebook, you can see I cut a Youngstown Studio logo on a piece of pine. It looked absolutely beautiful, so I'm stoked. We just fired up all of the 3D printers and printed out some sample stuff for the 3D printing classes. All of this stuff is in my sort of like on my dream bucket list, on my big whiteboard of everything that I wanted to conquer and do. It's all happening like right now, all at one time. So excited about this coming. And so as we get back to normal and we roll out these services, stay close or pay attention to what we're doing here on the radio show and what we put on Facebook and also on our website, because we're going to do a much better job of taking all that information and making it more palatable for everyone. So stay tuned there. We're going to take this break. We'll come back more on the Youngstown Computer Show. You're listening. This is the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show, and I'm Joe Daniel, your host. We're talking things that are happening in tech, so this program is wide open to you all program long. If you have any questions, need some guidance, feel free, 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 333-1570. Again, we don't do too much political here, but this is worth noting. We talked a little bit about Facebook and Twitter, and a couple of notable people over the last, I don't know, year or so, including the last president of the United States, are permanently banned from its permanently banned from its being a member, ever being participating on those those platforms again. So I think in going forward, we're going to see a lot of changes where these private companies that wield an unimaginable amount of power, making sort of like
subjective calls depending on, you know, political persuasions. That's all really dangerous. And, you know, I am a libertarian. And so that, you know, the more regulation and government seems to flub everything up. So usually it's hands off for me. The more integrations and regulations and people telling other people what to do, that's usually where we see those areas in their worst. I've never been a fan of Twitter. I think it's, you know, not a great place to, you know, do business or do anything for that matter. But I think everybody sort of has a right to be there. But I also feel that it is Twitter's baby and they can do whatever the heck they want. If they want to have, you know, just all of one thing, I really don't care. I just feel that when things consolidate where you have only a certain amount of outlets and it's hard to start a third or fifth or 12th version of this, we get kind of stuck. So my hopes are in the future that if we're going to create lots of outlets and we're going to, you know, start using politics to push people around out of different areas, that gets kind of scary for me. So I just hope whatever we're going to do, we keep regulation out of it. Let private companies go hog wild and do whatever, you know, they're going to do so that alternatives can pop up super quick and we can get away from that type and level of consolidation. I know it sucks in the short term because I could imagine if I used a platform as my primary method for communication and then that they come along and tell me I can't do that anymore, right? I would absolutely, if that was my business to be in, I would make sure that I would not overinvest in a single platform, and I make sure that I could be on more than one with the same kind of, wielding the same kind of power. So that's what I foresee next happening is that there'll be some more neutral territories that are of equal popularity, and then if you invest too much of yourself, I mean, the writing's on the wall now. So at any time, a public company can decide they don't want to deal with you and you have no choice but to just leave because that's their right to do so, then we just need to keep people willing to take you in and that have the, you know, equal amount of exposure to them. So that's my feeling. And you know, I get asked about this kind of stuff, having an opinion on it. And again, my political opinion doesn't weigh all that much because I'm not. It's not my business to be in politics. I'm a problem solver, an innovator, an inventor, and a troubleshooter, right? So if you asked me how to fix it and you were serious that you were going to pay me to do it, then I'd probably put on the line some ingredients and some processes that fix the problem. But my opinion about it doesn't do anything except for, you know, expose my weaknesses in those areas. But I'll tell you, the only real true problem that you need to tackle is that, you know, silencing people scares the crap out of me, no matter who. I don't care who it is, even if I disagree with them. I don't like the fact that somebody can be treated differently than another person. I think we have shied away from that for our entire career as a country, and I don't necessarily think we should get in that business now or any time in the future. So I hope that answers your question. I'm not dodging it, I swear to you. That's just, you know, as far as I'll take it without getting in the political scene, because I have no interest in politics. Is not my forte, so I have no interest in dabbling over there. But as I mentioned before, both Facebook and Twitter had some outages, and I wouldn't be surprised if that the outages eventually kind of translate down to maybe denial of service attacks, maybe someone being displeased with some of the actions, because if you become fodder for the political world, don't be surprised if someone gets, you know, mad at you and uses politics as a reason to take you offline. I mean, because nobody's going to feel sorry for a company that just silenced an individual from themselves also being silenced, right? Nobody's going to. I mean, that's going to be a great tale to tell if what great was presented when the silencer gets silenced, and that would just be very ironical. And I don't know, they have good stories about that. So don't be surprised if that's what ends up happening. Is that the just like Robin Hood? I get asked about that too. People are super excited about this, and I've explained this numerous times. So let me do it one more time with you. Robin Hood is a financial investing platform, and Share Builder was a version of this before, where we set up a financial system that is meant to cater to people who aren't investing hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. It's just regular low end $100 here, $100 there investor, and they make it easy to be able to you know pour resources in smaller quantities. They also open different markets like Bitcoin and some more stuff that maybe the traditional houses don't want to approach. They've opened it up to a different class of an investor, which I think is amazing. The more people we can get exposure to it and understand it and use it, the absolute better. But what ended up happening is because it's made up not of non-institutional investors, there's a couple of financial games that play where there is some power that institutional investors have that the regular investors do not. So, for instance, one of the things that what will happen is short selling. This is a practice where somebody can sell a share of stock that they don't own, essentially borrowing it for someone who does own it. Then they have a period of time to be able to shore up the negative value in their portfolio over a period of time. So they borrowed it, but they have to replace it in a given time. And when a stock is sold without you having to own it, it puts some pressure, some selling pressure on the equity, and it can actually sort of like bully. It can bully a couple of stocks if you get enough short interest in it. It could really do a devastation on the share value. When you short sale, there's actually it's registered where people can tell that there's a whole bunch of people who are short a certain stock. So people on Reddit who were all part of that whole Robinhood platform decided that they weren't happy that GameStop was being bullied by short sellers and their stock price was being depressed because of that short selling. So what they did was they decided, hey, let's take our total collective investment power and let's drill up the value of GameStop. And on all these short sellers who bought it at this level, when it's time to replace those shares, we'll just lose their tail end. So they're doing the exactly opposite. They're putting inauthentic buying pressure on a stock where it wasn't based on technicals. It wasn't based on anything except for we want to squeeze the short sellers. They just played the opposite game. So it got sort of like regular investors happy because they were able to gang up on the people that normally would gang up on stocks. And then Robinhood lost a bunch of money and their backers lost a bunch of money. And that fight is still going on. If you look at the GameStop stock, it was still, $120-some. What's interesting is GameStop then used their increased share value and opened more stores. So in the end, because of that Reddit thing, a bunch more money poured in there. Some of the institution held or internal company held stock, they were used to make the company stronger. And really who ended up losing was the short sellers. And so it's good for them. I like to see that. But it didn't really solve any problem. It was just a little bit of a fad transaction that can't keep repeating that. But it was kind of cool to see it go down. But I don't think it has any long term pro or long term con. But it was a little bit of a flex, and it was good to see that especially the smaller investors felt like they could come together and have at least equal power, and they did it because of the internet and because of these smaller platforms that go after them. So 330-729-9977. Let's go to Gary. Gary, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Yeah, so I wanted to add some input because I'm a libertarian as well, and I'm into tech. And you were mentioning it's annoying when these companies can subjectively just cancel people, close their accounts, and ban them. And what's exciting to me is I believe within it's probably about 5 years out from now, we're going to have something that's called decentralized identifiers and something, or DIDs, and they're working on it now. So in the crypto space, we have decentralized currency, essentially. I think in the future, we're going to have decentralized apps, and more specifically, decentralized social networks. And that's the exciting part to me, because then these centralized social media networks and platforms like Facebook, Twitter, maybe even YouTube. I think they could possibly go by the wayside, kind of much like MySpace did. And so that's one way that we'll be able to fight back against the the centralization of these social media networks and all the power that they yield.
So now, when you know, in the space where things are decentralized, you see first and foremost that it turns into a little bit of the Wild West. So for all of the parts we hate about it being regulated and somebody being in charge and being able to kick people off, you fall victim that because you can't pick and choose who's on the platform. How does it not get overrun by all of the scammers and the those purveyors?
Right. So like you said, you could have the potential for the opposite system, but I think also there will be different decentralized networks that will probably have these additional protocols in place that will help combat. For instance, if you think about social networks, you think about what people can post, right?
Right.
So you don't want to visit a network that would be 100% decentralized in the idea that people can post really horrible, images or videos, right, or content of any sort. But on top of that, they could have moderation of sort, whether that's centralized, and then it's just your personal, choice to use that network, which would be quasi, decentralized. Or it could be moderated from the community itself and users, like flagging. So, I'm not really sure how it will work out, but the technology isn't there yet. And I think once it does get there, it will change. It will end up hurting the tech giants that we see now.
All right, Gary, I want to throw this out and see what you think of this then. So on Black Mirror, which is one of my favorite shows going back, they had a social scoring mechanism that would rate you and how you behave in social media. Now, it was done kind of like, it was overly done on the program. But if you were to have a rating score about how your behaviors and being ranked out there, and then decide to allow content and things to be shown to you for people above a certain social score, and that would eliminate if somebody was a pornographer came on and started showing images, they might be using the same system, but it would sort of be, you'd be insulated by it because you only see stuff with people above a certain social score. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, that's a reality in a way in China, or at least certain parts of China right now, which I'm not sure if you heard about it, but their social credit system credit score. Yeah, horrendous. I mean, that's something, obviously, I'm sure the U.S. government would love to get in on that, and I'm sure in certain ways they are already. I think they can only do that, through centralization or, these authoritarian, protocols or whatever. I hope it doesn't get like that. I'm certainly not a fan of these vaccine passports, which is slightly a different topic. But, it's a fight. It's a fight between, the state and these companies that are centralized versus this technology that will allow things to become more decentralized.
Okay. All right, Gary, thank you so much for checking in. Appreciate you being out there. And I guess the more we talk about this kind of stuff, the more likely it is. We take these outlandish scenarios and how we're going to combat it. You know it's going to be a version of what we're talking about. It might not be, like I said, Black Mirror overplayed it, where you only get serve stuff that's in close enough to a reputation or a score that you choose, and then people who abuse that fall off of that and they have to earn their way back into the social score. And you're like, well, still, if you can hack it and you can mess with it and you can pollute it by then, all ganging up on somebody and reducing certain people's social credit score so they disappear. So this isn't probably the option, but as we talk about it in this way, as you know, that in the future it will be something, something of this flavor to be able to, because that's really is. We don't want somebody in charge of it, and we don't want no one in charge of it. It's got to be a balance between the two at some point. 330-729. Kyle, I see you out there. We'll come back and take your call as soon as we get back. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBM. I'll be back. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier. And I want to kind of follow up what I said in the last segment there. We can't even decide what the standard should be. So I threw out there that what happens on your social platform if a pornographer came on, right?
And that's because that is below the standard of stuff that I want to see. But I don't necessarily think that everybody out there could even agree what the standard should be let on social media. So there's going to be some stuff that I feel would be above. There's somebody who would say, well, that's permitted. I would, you know, if someone says the words you can't use on radio on social media, it's obviously something that I don't want to see. So that I would allow that. I would like that to be below the standard that I want to see on social media. But I think that's an important point, that not only do we trust the people to keep to the rules, we don't even need we wouldn't even be able to agree on what the rules should be. 330-729-9977. Let's go to Kyle next. Kyle, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hey, Joe. I'll second Black Mirror, but with the caution of beware of that first episode. What a way to introduce a show.
Are you talking Black Mirror? Oh, yeah.
But at any rate, I remember a few years ago, there was an app. It was kind of an if this, then that, where it was able to automate some of your life. So, for instance, if you're if you set your home as a location, once this app recognizes you're at home, you know, maybe it turns your lights on, or, you know, some of these other types of have. Do you remember a name of one?
No, I would love to preview something like that. So no, if any of my listeners out there know of an app that is what he was describing there, please let me know, because I'd like to try it out. We bought into we got two systems. So we use the Philips system. So all of our lights are sort of like choreographed at different times. They turn on and off at different times. And then our furnace has the thermostat that's also programmable, where it can do something like that. But if you had one thing that could mess with it, that would be great. Have you used it, or you just heard about it?
You know, I looked into it. I wasn't as savvy at that time. But now, again, same thing. We've got plugs. We've got thermostats. We've got all of these connected entities. But this app, you know, for instance, when you turn on Bluetooth, it will open your music player. Or if you plug in headphones, it will do this. It's just a way to set up a bunch of commands. But
okay.
I can't for the life of me think. If I recall, it was like initials, you know, like KPWI or something. But I haven't done any search, but I thought I'd just try the experts first.
Okay, well, I'll keep it open. So if anybody in our audience has heard of something like that, I'd be completely interested to trial this out as well. So we'll keep the lines open for it.
Yeah. Keep up the great work, Joseph.
All right. Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate you being out there. Appreciate the phone call. And so here, you know, what Kyle brought up is kind of interesting, because, you know, in the future, all of us as just regular consumers will be able to use these same algorithms that are sort of being demonstrated for, you know, buying things and what some of our cars are even doing. Some of them will translate down to our, you know, our everyday lives. They've already gotten us to the point where we don't mind giving up certain information. Like he was saying, you know, when your phone knows when you're home. Well, Google Maps already knows when you come home. It basically draws a line every time you used it and everywhere you've been. I can open up Google Maps and tell me every place that I've been in the last 6 months, because it basically knows where you're at. You have GPS. It's constantly running in the background, and it knows where you go. My car, when it pulls in the driveway, when I get within 50 feet of my garage, it opens the garage door. When I leave, it closes the garage door. These are like very simple artificial intelligence, but yet it's taking multiple points of data and being able to weigh it and doing things on your behalf. Like, that's cool that it opens my garage door. What can it do further? Can it open my garage door and then unlock my front door and then turn my kitchen light on and then make me some toast? I mean, you could just keep going on, and the software can continue to serve you as long as we continue the Internet of Things, where, you know, you don't know of a good reason why your stove can connect to the internet, except for one day your stove might be able to print you some food and cook it in one shot, right? Your microwave might be able to do the same thing, your refrigerator, all these things that have the potential to be able to serve you in a different capacity when these artificial intelligence programs start to go end-to-end trigger when stuff happens. So if anybody in the audience knows the program he was talking about, all of us that are previewing this stuff, when you have automation systems with Philips lights, or if you have your thermostat, you are guinea pigging what will be what the regular life experience. Do you remember like when they like futuristic technology? This is the kind of stuff. Like they would walk around their house and they would talk their lights on, like, you know, whatever, Betty, turn my lights on, and the computer system would turn the lights on. We have that now, right? It's just a matter of a lot of it's triggered by giving voice commands, you know, contextual commands about what time it is. Like my car knows when I'm going to work. If I leave my house at a certain time, it plots in my GPS going to work. How does it know that? Well, it has to take in multiple data sets. It can't just always assume I'm going to work. I woke up today and I drove around the same time that I normally would work, but it's never seen me go to work on a Saturday, so it didn't put work as my destination in the GPS. So this is, it's kind of cool that we get to be you know, sort of like early adopters, and we're going to see it come to fruition when more of this stuff serves us in our everyday life. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be right back.
Title and fees extra.
Tired of cleaning your gutters? Leaf Filter is America's number one gutter guard, guaranteed to keep gutters clean for good. Get 15% off your purchase now. Call 844-300-LEAF or visit www.tryleaffilter.com for a free estimate.
R&L Carriers has immediate openings for positions including CDL drivers starting at $23.97 an hour and forklift operators at $18.27 an hour. Stop by their open house at 1320 Heck Road from 8 to 5, April 23rd and 24th, or visit careers.rlc.com.
Are you over 50? Would you like to get up to 33% more income in retirement? Then call now for this free book, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers, from a leading financial firm on maximizing your income in retirement. That's right, free. This free book reveals little-known truths about annuities in simple-to-understand terms that will help you make the right choices before buying an annuity. And it's free. As a bonus, we'll also throw in a free annuity rate report summarizing the rates and benefits from financially strong insurers.
Call 800-854-6610.
That's right, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers and Annuity Rate Report, both absolutely free for calling today.
Call 800-854-6610. That's 800-854-6610.
Sponsored by Annuity General. Producers have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer. Increased income is possible using strategies suited to your goals and may require buying multiple annuities and holding them full term.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, and we're talking about things that are happening in tech. I do a business show right before this program, and I had a message that came in I didn't see. Let me respond that through real quick, asking about trying to make your pitch to angel investors and how do you get in front of people you know, the right people and whatnot. In the future, okay, and this is going to be in a pretty immediate future, we're going to be partnering with a couple of people around town, and we're going to hold some meetings and breakfasts, and it is specifically geared towards executives, people who do have the ability to support companies and business expansion and growth. The problem is that a lot of people who you really need to get in touch with or in front of are inundated with salespeople. And so that we kind of like have this salesperson sprint. It's nothing against salespeople. But if you do, let's just say, you know, we go to one of the Chamber of Commerce mixers, right? Well, a lot of companies send their sales staff to Chamber of Commerce. They're trying to create relationships and hand out business cards and set up opportunities. Well, executives won't go to those kind of things. I'm not saying all executives. I'm my type of executives, because I don't want to sit there and be pitched. I don't want to constantly be trying to sold. I don't get a whole lot out of that. I would like to be around business and to talk about expansions and see where I can help. But always being under the pressure of being sold something is a little much, because the doorway constantly buzzes with people coming through trying to sell me something, from selling me money to selling me new revenue or new opportunities, new business. All of this, it gets to be too much. There's some insulation between you and the right people, and we need to have a way to facilitate get some people involved that aren't just salespeople. And again, I'm not minimizing salespeople. Please don't hold that against me that I'm even saying that. I have a lot of respect for people who are good in sales, but for this kind of stuff, it doesn't help when a sales cycle is introduced inside of one of these development cycles, because it just kind of unwinds it. A couple of the groups that I'm in, if you ever take different types of people and try to get them at the same same table at the same time. One person will be talking and the rest of the people at the table will completely freaking check out, right? Because while you love to talk about what you love to talk about, I don't. And my time is really meaningful. And if I have to sit through 2 hours of droning on about stuff, I'll lose it. I'll never be involved again. I mean, I had to recuse myself from a bunch of board seats because it was so much time taken out. And I couldn't justify all of that time unless it was something super critical and important. So to answer your question about it, if you pay attention to what I'm doing, my goal is to get a bunch of pro-business people together to meet regularly and to share the needs of expansion and growth while at the same time trying to qualify that the right people are in the room and make sure that there aren't any salesmen. And really, you just have to promise me before you show up that this isn't a one sales pitch type of thing. This is a you have to give to get. So everybody in that room is both able to receive and able to give. No takers that are going to be let in that door. And so just stay tuned to the stuff that I've got going on. We're going to partner with some people to get those people in the room and see if we can get some magic to happen. So thank you for that that question. 330-729-9977. Another pitch for Youngstown Computer, because Youngstown Computer makes this show possible. If you would have any computer problems or you want to buy equipment or you just need some help for starting now, we've got bench service that are available to you. You can go in, talk to Rich, drop your stuff off with them. They'll assess it, give a quote, and then figure out how to repair, replace, or whatever is necessary to get you back up and running. Like I said, the number one upgrade that we're doing now is if you've got a platter drive that we can transfer, grab all your data, slap it on a solid state drive, and you get where Windows takes a minute and a half to boot, it takes 30 seconds to boot. I mean, it's just phenomenal how quick you can make these things run. Just with one little upgrade like that. I've even purchased a cheap computer off of the shelf that I know had an analog disk, and all I did was throw a solid state in there, and it was like day and night. So very much if you need that, if you've got, and if you don't even know, I mean, if you don't know if you have a solid state versus an analog drive, call Rich up and just ask him if he'll log into your machine real quick and check. And if you do, he'll make the suggestion about whether or not you need a solid state or not. So, again, 330-259-7278. That's Youngstown Computer's number. Even if you don't need something right now, put it on a sticky note. Slap it on the side of that computer. One day, you will need our services, and we will really appreciate if you will patronize us and bring your stuff to us when you have that, because so many other things get enabled when you do business with Youngstown Computer. And even those of you who have bought computers from us over the years, we really appreciate it. We know you could buy cheaper computers off of the retail shelves, no doubt. But those of you who purchase from us, we build them here. We source components. We're better than the computers you can buy off the retail. And we stand behind them. We don't mess around with little replacements. There's been a couple we've sold a couple hundred computers. I think that we've had to replace one on the residential and like a half on the commercial. One was a memory stick that was definitely gone, and one was a computer that I just replaced the whole thing because I'm not going to mess around with it and make you wait for I troubleshoot it. You just get another one and we move on from it. That's how consistent these machines run. They're more pricey, and that's what you get. I don't want to take a computer out to someone and then have to pick it up for 15 repairs, right? I want to build something that lasts, and so we can kind of put it and forget it for a little while until there's maintenance or whatever to run. I don't want it to go down with stupid things like overheating and motherboards going out and stuff like that. So I'd rather pay a little bit more for the components. And I know you, those of you who supported us, don't mind paying a couple extra bucks to make sure that it comes from us, sourced local, and using the best components that we'll try to make as reliable as we possibly can. So all of that stuff, 330-259-7278. Call Rich when you have something and get something set up. Let's see. I think the caller was thinking about ifttt.com. If this is that, then, but ITTFT works with web services and the caller seemed to want something to respond to an event on a local computer. Okay, I'm going to take note of that. And this is one of those deals where we have the most intelligent listener group on the planet. So I don't doubt that this is exactly what we were looking for, or at least close to it. So I'm going to trial this out and put it there. But thank you so much for texting that in. We have a huge wealth of information in this audience, and I really appreciate it. Appreciate the participation. 330-729-9977 is the phone number. Let's go to Gary. Gary, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, this is in reference to the lady that called the first hour about her computer random problems. I guess she was having mouse or keyboard issues or something like that.
Yeah, go ahead.
And anyway, I kind of experienced the same thing. And what I've done, too, and this is going out to everybody, if just unplugging the mouse or the keyboard doesn't work to correct those random problems, what I've done also is turn off the computer, and then if there's a main power switch on the back, turn that off. If there's not a main power switch, simply unplug the computer, hit the power on the front, which I've heard clears all kinds of random memory that might get clogged, and then plug the computer back in, turn it on, and that usually fixes the problem.
Beautiful. Yeah, and what that does is with the computer unplugged, you hit the power button, that releases everything that is stored up in the capacitors, and then you get a full discharge so that the memory is completely empty, and then when you power it up, it's as fresh as you can get it.
Yeah, yeah. I've done that with my one Asus computer because sometimes the mouse tends to freeze, and that seems to clear up the freezing process as well.
Okay. All right, Gary, thank you so much. Appreciate you being out there. Appreciate you sharing with us. So take that in consideration, too. You can do a power reset, including with it unplugged. And you can do the same thing with laptops. If you unplug it and you take the battery out and you hit the power button, you'll see the power button come on for like a split second, and then it'll go away. That is discharging whatever stuff was left in the board, and then you get a fresh restart when you power that sucker up. Somebody also mentioned that you can also go into the settings, the mouse and keyboard settings, and decrease the sensitivity on the mouse if you wanted to not jump around quite as much, even if you have it on a surface that has weird textures or reflective or whatever. You might want to try that. But just a little bit of moving in different scenarios will basically isolate the variable and tell you if it might be a mouse that's just broke and you need another one. So when you unplug the mouse, it goes away. Or what Gary said, if you do a reset, maybe it clears some setting out of there that was messing with the mouse. There's been times when this computer I'm sitting in front of right now has two mice plugged into it, a wireless mouse and a wired mouse. We prefer the wireless one, but both will move the cursor if we start moving it. So maybe you have a second mouse plugged in or a wireless mouse somewhere in a mouse. So again, you can use the process of elimination to eliminate some of these variables, and it'll become clearer what you need to do after you eliminate some stuff. I was surprised even on my home computer when I had a mouse and keyboard. The keyboard got junked up, but the mouse didn't. And I never unplugged the receiver, so the mouse stayed active. The keyboard went away, and then I replaced it with a new mouse and keyboard, so I had two. So 330-729-9977. Texter says, Microsoft just released Power Automate Desktop, which may automate some things the listener wanted on the desktop. And I don't know about Android, but iOS has Shortcuts app that does automations on your phone that the caller might find useful. So thank you. That three really good recommendations. We have ifttt.com was the first one. Then we have Microsoft Power Automate Desktop. And then we have inside of Android, there are some automations that can happen inside the phone. What this is related to, we had a whole segment on sort of like algorithms and artificial intelligence that can start assembling contextual sort of like things that you can use to automate your household and your thermostat and your lighting system. Somebody did ask about the Philips and if I would do it again. Now, here's the thing about Philips. I have a lot of light bulbs in my house. So to completely commit to an entire household of these light bulbs, it's pretty expensive because these LED ones that connect to your Wi-Fi, I think the cheapest that you could find is like $10. And the more expensive, like the floodlights, are every bit of $30. So when you're used to paying a couple cents for light bulb and they get up into the, you know, $10 range, it gets pretty pricey. So I've been just, as they've been burning out, I've been replacing them with LED. I did, you know, a couple of full rooms when I had some, you know, some extra improvement money that came in, but I'm still not at 100%. So I would say the rooms that matter are completely automated. Like at 5:30 in the morning, my office lights come up, but they don't come up full. They come up about half because I'm just waking up in the morning and it's 5:30. And if it came up full, it might burn out my irises and I might be dead, right? So they come up about half. So every time that happens, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool. And I go to bed at the same time. So in my bedroom, 9:30, I know, don't laugh at me, I'm an old guy. So 9:30, the lights cut off. Why? Because I'm supposed to go to bed, and that is indication that it's 9:30 without me even having to look at any kind of clock. So the lights go off in my bedroom and the office lights come on. We also have, you know, the buttons on our phone that if we just want to turn all of the inside lights off, one button, everything goes off. And then we have outside, same thing. Now, the outside ones, when it gets to be a certain time that it's usually dark, all the outside lights come on. Great. And in the morning, they all go off at the time that they should. Inside, I probably could do something like that. Like if I'd forgotten to turn the basement lights off, I could probably make it so that at 10 o'clock, they automatically. But then I think like on a weekend or something like that, if I'm watching a movie, I don't want to be in the basement with all the ghosts and the things that will murder you and the lights go off. That would be terrifying. So I haven't quite done that version, but I could if I wanted to. But then those are all like time triggering automations. They even have like thermostats that if it doesn't detect motion in a certain while, it goes to a lower your thermostat or raise your thermostat when it's heating season. And that way, when you're not around, it senses that there's no activity. And that way you don't have to pay to heat a house. When I go away from vacations or road trips, I definitely turn off the hot water tank. But this is all, you know, very manual versions. In the future, be it when these are all connected things, that it will just sort of make those decisions, you know, on their own. Now, you start taking private companies and deciding that, you know, as long as I can set my thermostat and I can control the algorithms, cool. When the computer system thinks that I'm consuming too much electricity and start like overruling me having my lights on when I want to have them, then we're going to have an issue. And everyone listening to this that has sort of that bent where they have a lot of mistrust for regulators and officials and whatever, that some of you will say, well, that'll never happen. And the rest of us are like, yeah, it'll probably happen. And so we're just going to keep an eye on that, where I want it to be very private. I want it to be in my control. I don't want outside authorities to be able to control that. Man, that libertarian bent is coming way out in me today. So 330-729-9977. But it is really exciting times because of all of this stuff. I think human beings, when we're allowed to use these tools, I think we're way more effective. I think we spend far too much time and resources on stuff that are going to be disappearing and becoming invisible. A lot of the platforms and the computers and the tablets are all going to be just integrated with who we are. So we don't have to worry about which one we're using and the customizations. They'll kind of just they'll react to us. And, we say things, have conversations now, and the suggestions that Google makes to us or Amazon makes to us are a little bit threaded to what we talk about in our activity. You know, if we buy toilet paper on the 27th, and as you get towards the 27th, it gets more likely that you're going to ask about that, and maybe it gets closer to the top of the search when you're looking for, you know, consumables or whatever. And I'm telling you, Amazon behind the scenes, based on what you buy, they start moving products that you buy closer to you. That's why your shipping times keep going down, because you got these artificial intelligence software programs knowing what you're going to do, and they start moving infrastructure towards you before you do it. So there might be a case of Pepsi right now waiting for you, knowing that you're going to buy it over this weekend. Anyway, 330-729-9977. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. We're winding down the program for today, but we got another couple calls we can get in at the end. Let's go to Dan next. Dan, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
I'm having a problem when I go to make an attachment to an email, like with a photograph. The photograph fills in a gigantic size. Okay, now I'm importing these photos from a camera, you know, with a SD card onto a PC. Now I noticed that the pictures I've taken a while back, I don't have that problem, but am I doing something when I import those photos that cause them to show up so huge?
Yeah, when they come off the camera, they are pretty big because usually the camera will take it in really high definition. You can do one of two things. You can either have the camera take lower quality pictures, and that way they'll be a one for one. Or once they come off the camera, you can scale them down before you send them. We have a bunch of realtors that would take a bunch of photos, and we have this program that you can feed all of the pictures through at one time. And I think it's called like Magic Scaler or something like that. It's a little 32-bit application, and all you do is like drag the picture in there, and it creates a lower quality image, and then you can send it off and email it.
Okay, here's the thing. I'm using the same camera. Nothing changed on the camera end of it. I import them onto the PC in the same manner with the SD card. But it seemed like there's something that I'm doing differently on the importing procedure where when I go to attach them to an email or to, you know, run something on Craigslist, they show up in something huge.
Yeah, I'm guessing something was scaling it down for you, and it's not doing it anymore. So I would probably just get something that would do that side of it. Now, do you need high definition pictures right off the camera? Would it maybe behoove you to go into the settings and make it maybe standard definition or lower?
Yeah, that wouldn't be a big deal.
And that would probably be way easier. And that way, coming right off the camera, you can send them, and that way they won't be gargantuan.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. And I'm not sure, like, maybe your camera came with, like, software that may have done the scaling for you, but it's just as easy, instead of trying to make it work the way that it did before, that you know what was happening. Something was scaling it for you, and just trying to find a quick analog for that. So we did have a person who called early in the program about profiles or having the resolutions. And let me give you a couple. I wasn't able to find an article that would step you through this, but let me give you four or five things that I would try right off the get-go. Now, number one, if you have your display resolution set lower than your monitor, I would probably start there and have it no less than 1920 by 1080, having that as your display resolution for your computer. Anything lower than that, then you're probably already seeing things that are pixelated and a little bit distorted. Second thing is make sure that your zoom, once you have the resolution, your computer isn't zooming way in. Get that zoom at 100% instead of 125 or 150, and then do the same thing within Firefox, is you might have to zoom out to make it 100% rather than 125. It's probably one of those distortions. Great show. Thank you for all the participation. Great calls this week. You guys have a great week. This has now been the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN.